we don't interrupt you. If you're going to buy...
Hello, my name is Barbara. I'm a compulsive overeater. Last Monday was the 35th anniversary of my first OA meeting.
Wow.
And I brought a notebook. I was going down memory lane, you know, my before pictures. And Just for Today, published by Dear Abby, brought me into the program. I got to thank her personally at 1992 Baltimore Convention for bringing me into OA. And then the literature, if you have never seen Grace Sheet, I have it in Spanish. I don't have it in English. But anyway, and I wanted to share this literature here is the one that saved me when I was a newcomer. Before you take that first compulsive bite, remember, and it said, cultivate a helpful association of ideas, 12B. Associate that first compulsive bite as being the single cause of all the, it's actually A, the single cause of all the misery, shame, and remorse you've ever known. And I used to carry that through the grocery store and say it over and over to get past certain places. And then this is something you can still buy. It's the forerunner of the group handbook. It used to be red. And if you want to look in the back and see what a meeting format was like in 1976, that's it. And then I have a lifeline from 1972.
Oh, my God.
and a lifeline from the year I came in the program. And you can see that there's been a big change. So I'm going to pass this around and let people look at it. I thought it was fun to go through my files and see some things from when I was a newcomer. I was asking what do you want to share, and it's kind of hard. There's no way I can do 35-year story in 20 minutes. But I'll share my service story, and you will get some of, because service has been critical to my recovery from the very beginning. The reason for that is when I first came in program, we only had 4 meetings in my area. And if I wanted a meeting to be there for me, I had to make sure I was there, because it wasn't, I could not depend on it being there. I remember that when I had to, I switched my home group, this new meeting location, I was the only person there. And that meeting stayed there for probably, I'm going to say about 10 years or 20 years. And there were, the last time I went to that meeting, there were 35 people there. And there are now 5 meetings in that church at noon. This was an evening meeting. So there are a lot of meetings there. I was there maybe in the last 5 years. So it was really exciting to see the meeting that I went to when I was brand new in program was there for so many years. So I came in, and the first service I did was I brought people to the meeting. We had a step meeting in our area, and I used to give people rides. And those two people became very close friends. Neither of them recovered, but I recovered. And I'm going to get emotional. One of them was, she died from heart disease because she just could not bear to live her life without eating compulsively, and I don't blame her because I know what happened. And the other one, she came to meetings for a long time, but there was, she just couldn't make it either. And but helping them to try to recover helped me recover, kept me coming back to meetings because I relapsed for 6.5 years. I didn't get abstinent right away. I struggled for a long time. I did not work the steps because it says take what you like and leave the rest, so I did. I didn't like any of the step stuff, so I left that. I left that behind. And in 1977, my husband transferred to San Antonio, and we had a speaker from who was, I don't know if he was on the board at the time, but he was certainly had been on the board at some point. He was on the board of trustees. And I heard, you have to work step 3 with no exceptions. And that means, and I said, well, wait a minute. I want to have this goal weight, and I want to be, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I have this whole laundry list of things that I wanted. And I said, I can't turn that over. And, of course, that's not what the program says. It says without, you know, you just turn it all over without exception. And I was very upset, but I never forgot it. It took me 5 years to figure out what it was talking about. I just did not understand it. I did not understand that. I didn't forget it either. So during this period of time, I had done one four-step inventory. I couldn't find anyone who had done a fifth step. This is in San Antonio, right? So I had to give it to a clergyman, and I did that because I was waking up in the middle of the night crying. Now, I was thin. I was at goal weight. But I, you know, and this was the feelings coming up. I just couldn't cope. So I did a fifth step. They said, you know, do some more step work. So I did. On December 26, 1977, I decided that because turkey has no sugar in it, that I could get back on it, but I'm going to binge tonight. Well, tomorrow didn't show up for 15 months. I did not stop coming to meetings. I kept coming back. I had a sponsor. I couldn't find a sponsor, but when I finally found one, she fired me after 2 weeks because I didn't get abstinent. And so I said, well, I'm not going to ask anybody to be my sponsor. But I had a kind of a busy buddy friend that she asked somebody for me. So I did get a sponsor eventually. I was afraid. I didn't want to get rejected again. And I did get a sponsor, and it was very fortunate. She was in graduate school for counseling, and I was actively suicidal at that time. I gained 20 pounds in 2 weeks during 1978 at some point. This was also a very difficult time in my personal life because my brother became paralyzed during that year. He was in the process of developing medical problems, which ultimately resulted in paralysis. So, you know, it was not a good time for me. I still kept coming back. I never stopped going to meetings. I had a friend who said, oh, I'm afraid to ask you to be, you know, I'm afraid to be friends with you because you're binging. It's like, well, what could I say? I said, well, at least you're honest. But this is the way it was like. It was like, you know, you're in relapse, you're no good. And so, you know, I was in the 12-Step Within Committee, and I've been privileged to work on the 12-Step Within Committee at conference. The handbook that we were talking about in the committee meeting, I have the first version of that. It was written by a sponsee of mine and was brought to conference in the early 90s. Recovery checklist, that came out of this region. In the late 80s, I saw a need for something of that nature. So I came to Region 7, and at my first assembly, I was elected chair of that committee. I know you're not supposed to do that, but we did it. We didn't, you know, this was before that rule. And so we worked on that. In Region 7, I brought it to conference, and it was ultimately conference approved. It was brought on, and it was approved. And now there's a revision up. To be, you know, they change things every few years. So that is directly connected to people here, you know, that came out. In 1980, and I know I'm sorry it's so disjointed, but it's just hard. In 1980, my husband got transferred to Germany. He's in the retired military now. And I was terrified. But I went anyway. And 12 hours after I got off the plane in Frankfurt, I went to an OA meeting that wasn't there. So, you know, I could never take OA meetings for granted, that there was going to be a meeting. I can't tell you how many OA meetings I've started because I needed a meeting. And this was BC before computers. So we had, you know, letters were a month turnaround time, month to 6 weeks. Long-distance calls were prohibitively expensive, and we had like five of us. There were two other meetings in the area, and there were five of us, and I started up that meeting, so we had three meetings a week for five people, basically. And the first summer I was there, I got there in February, the first summer, everybody went home to the United States, except me. And so we had nobody but me attending three meetings. Now, how did I know to keep three meetings open and how to do it? Well, I read a Lifeline article called Visit to a Small Meeting. And that article you can still read in, it's one of the first two stories in Lifeline Sampler. Yes, that story's in there. And I read that, And I said, oh, okay. So I bring a tape recorder and I had convention tapes and I would sit there for the hour and that was my meeting. I got abstinent in Germany. I didn't get abstinent in the D.C. area with tons of meetings. I got abstinent in Germany with five of us. We were all binging at one time or another. I mean, but when they say, I put my hand in yours and together we can do it, we can never do it alone, they're not kidding. That's how it works. And I ultimately met the original members of the German meetings. And they came, and she said, she came to our meeting, and somebody mentioned something about abstinence requirements for sharing, which was really a joke because there were only four of us. But anyway, and I explained what that was about. And she said, well, you know, when we had our first meeting, we were all binging. You know, somebody had to share. So I really, at that moment, I realized what was really important. You know, I put my hand in yours, and together we can do. At the end of the year, at the end of that summer, people started coming back, and one of those people turned out to be my sponsor. She came into a room, and I took one look at her, and I said, she's got it. She's got the whole thing, not just the I'm crazy about food, but I'm abstinent and I'm miserable. Because that's what everybody I knew. I only knew one person, that person who was on the board. That's the only person I ever met in a way that was serenely abstinent. I'd never met anybody before that. Everybody else was like me, you know, white-knuckling it for long periods of time. We didn't know anything about the steps. You know, what are the steps? It's like, I don't get this. So she said, and I was struggling, and I was starting to put on weight. Now, for me, starting to put on weight, it was, you know, I wasn't really that overweight, but I knew it was just a matter of time. I knew. And so it wasn't like I was being complacent or anything. And she said, you have to work the steps, and you have to work them all. And the one that I hadn't worked was my personal least favorite, step 9, making amends. I was not abstinent making amends, but I did them anyway, because if I waited until I had so much abstinent, well, I'd still be waiting, because I had to work the steps to get abstinent. I had to clean up this stuff to get abstinent. It wasn't a matter of getting abstinent first, and then I couldn't do it. I was past that. That was 6 years earlier. And so my abstinence started. I had a couple of slips after that. And my abstinence started August 4th. Kind of interesting with the fours and the eights. But anyway, 1983 was my first abstinence. And my last binge was vegetables. I'm a healthy food binger. It's one of my pseudo-anorexic tricks, you know. We all have these little things that we do. That was mine. And if I hadn't kept those meetings going, I don't know if I'd be abstinent today. Honestly, I don't know that I'd be abstinent today. Because there was nothing there but lots of food. I mean, you know, the American store, the military store, would close like at 9 o'clock every night. And all the compulsive overeaters would come in at 8:45 to get their stuff. How do I know this? Because I was there too, you know. What can I say? You know, we all had to get our stash for the night. Or for the weekend, Friday night, forget it, you know, because everything was closed over the weekends. So my service story has been, and I've done every service I could possibly do. It's sometimes been scary. Service has challenged my weak points, which is definitely organization, not misorganization. But I try anyway, and some really cool things have happened to me. Just me speaking in front of this many people, because at my first meeting I wouldn't say anything at all. I would hardly say my name. I was very, very painfully shy, and you would not, people, you know, nobody would know that. I mean, I am an introvert, but I'm not, you know, the kind of person that's going to hide behind my computer screen, you know. I'm not like that anymore. And that's a real gift to... I had the privilege of sponsoring Germans bilingually, you know, because my German wasn't that good, but they could speak and I could understand, and then I responded in English. And that was really important to me, because I'm going to give another pitch for our fund, you know, the opportunities is going to go to the translation fund. And I want to share my experience on that. my sponsee came to me one day and she said, and I was asking about a step, and I said, well, let's go in the big book and look it up. So she says, I don't know what you're talking about. So I said, well, show me your book. And she did. They had not yet translated the first 164 pages of the big book into German. So that's why she didn't know. Now, she was fluent in English. She could have read, but she had no idea that she was missing anything by reading the German translation, because it was not the same. And it has been since changed. I mean, it's totally the same now. So that's how important it is. I mean, imagine if all the OA literature was in a language such as Chinese. There might be somebody who knows Chinese here. Mandarin Chinese, and I can't read it, and that's the only OA literature there is. Imagine that. And I remember Donna did that at one, you know, it was Greek and German and everything, you know, it was the Serenity Prayer or something, and all these languages. Imagine that. And so I know what it's like to be overseas and to be isolated, but even then, I was able to get abstinent. I mean, that's just totally amazing. And how much more time do I have, Mike?
About 3 minutes.
Okay. I got enough time to tell this. So anyway, I knew something had drastically changed after I worked, because I went to my boss had a Christmas party. And she cooked for this party for months, or for a month, okay? And she froze all this stuff. So I said, well, I'm going to go to the party. I'm going to have my dinner there, and then I'm going to go to the OA meeting after. Okay? So I went to the party, and when it came time to go to the OA meeting, I realized I was surrounded by food for an hour or two, and I forgot to eat anything. So I had to go to the OA meeting hungry. And that is, now I am the charter member of the Clean Your Plate Club. Okay? And if you recall that person, the person who's on the board, they didn't eat everything on their plate. And that was a new kind. Now, see, I'm the kind of person, if I was alone and the salad dressing, I had to lick it all off. You know, I mean, I wouldn't do it in front of anybody because I was too embarrassed. But I made sure, you know, the spoon and scrape. You know, if my husband asked me for a slice of my orange, he was a dead man. He was a dead man. And then if he did it without me realizing it and it was already eaten, then I had to open up another orange and take one slice out and eat it. That's what I call stark raving abstinent. And I have to watch that because it can still happen today. Because when I'm upset about something, the food obsession can show up in my abstinence. That I can do things that, under most circumstances, are completely sane, normal, but I can make it. I can turn it into a food obsession. That I just heard this at a meeting. Somebody was saying. You know, my weighing and measuring, because that's what she does, can be sane one day and controlling food the next, and I have to be really careful that I know the difference. And because stark raving abstinent is not a place that I can live anymore. I can't do that anymore. If I had to go back to that, I would not be able to abstain for very long. I just cannot do it. I had to find something in between stark raving abstinent and all-out binging. And while I was in Europe, I was forced into that because the things that used to work in D.C. metro area didn't work in Germany for a lot of different reasons. And so anyway, I think that's all my time. And I'm just really glad. I'm so glad that I get the chance to go to conference because I love to go to conference. I lost track after 10. I love to go to conference. And it's unfortunate that I'm from a small inner group. I did rotate out so somebody else could come in. And she's rotated out, so now I'm here for today, and we'll see where I end up. But I get to go to conference. I get to go to the reference committee. All these things that I never... And last thing, I want to give a positive pitch for the 12 traditions and relationships. There's somebody here, and she knows who she is, who told me the traditions are about relationships. And that was something I had to think about for 5 years before I even began to start thinking about applying that to my life. And then it probably took another 10 or 15 years after that to actually start doing it. And I'm seeing results in my own meetings where people are starting at every intergroup meeting. I say, you know, the tradition of the month, and I talk about how it applies to me personally. Like tradition 4 is each OA member should be autonomous except in each OA group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. So personally, each adult should be autonomous except in matters affecting other people or humanity as a whole. So, you know, just that little quick thing I'll end with. So thanks for listening, everybody. It's great.
Thank you.